Welcome on to the Dunked On Basketball Podcast, continuing our season preview series of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And joining us is Northeast Ohio Media Group, Cleveland Cavaliers beat writer, Chris Haynes, probably the guy most plugged in on the Tristan Thompson situation. Chris, what's up?
Nate, thanks for having me, man. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm great, although unfortunately we already had some connection problems that were probably my fault, so I apologize for that. But you know, you're doing a great job of pretending like this is original, so I appreciate it.
Hey, I got a quick memory, man. You got to move on to the next play, man. Let's go.
Yeah, so you decide you're going to go out in your car so we can get a good, nice, silent connection, do the LeBron, like, hang out in the car with your phone, just no distractions.
I'm in the minivan, man. I pull my seat back, and it's all about me and you, man. Me and you in the NBA, man. So we all on one accord right now.
All right, so this Tristan Thompson situation seems like it's coming to a head now in the last week. There was the LeBron Instagram post saying, you know, let's get a deal done, posing with Tristan. He later theoretically clarified those comments today, talking about how he's trying to urge both sides to get it done. But, you know, he certainly looked like he was a little allied with Tristan in that photo. And obviously everyone knows the connections between James's agency or James's agent and also Tristan. So what do you think is going on here now? You know, what is the last offer that the Cavs have, and do you think they might be pressured to up it by what's happened here?
Yeah, I do. And the last offer that I've heard that, you know, it's been the 5 years, $80 million pack that's been out there. I've heard that they've upped that a little bit, but I've told the parameters of the deal are a little bit structured differently. I guess I would take that to mean that they've trimmed off some of the years. But that's as far as I know in the contract situation. But on the pressure on LeBron James, look, at Media Day, General Manager David Griffin said this Tristan Thompson situation will not be a distraction with the team. David Blatt reiterated that stance. LeBron James even said it himself. Teammates, James Jones, everybody else said the same thing, echoed those sentiments. And so all of a sudden, LeBron James comes out with an Instagram post with the caption saying, get it done. I miss my brother. So if there wasn't a distraction before, there certainly is now. And LeBron James is part of bringing that distraction on. And then he comes out letting us know that it is a distraction today. He used the term, it's an elephant in the room. You know, so you know, if there wasn't one, if the Cavaliers organization were trying to pretend like this would be okay, that it wouldn't bother this team, then, you know, their superstar player is not on one accord with them on that. Yes, we all know they share the same agent with Rich Paul, and LeBron has said repeatedly how valuable Tristan is to this team and how he wants him back. But I just think right now, Nate, it's a sense of urgency on LeBron's part. The guy is going to turn 31 in December. They're expected, betting favorites, to win the NBA title. You know, how many prime years does he have left? The expectation of the city of Cleveland having not endured a championship in the city in 51 years. There's a lot of emphasis placed on this team. And can the Cavaliers win it all without Tristan Thompson? Well,
I don't think they can.
I don't think so.
They'd probably get out of the East without him, right?
Yeah, they got it. But, you know, they're expected to do that anyways. But you look at the San Antonio's, Golden State's, Houston Rockets are upgraded. There's some real legitimate teams over in that West. And if they can or cannot win the title with or without Tristan, you know, LeBron James, I guess he put out today that he doesn't want to find out. You know, he'd rather have his full squad on, you know, out there on the floor. And so, yes, there's some urgency. There's some pressures. No matter what LeBron said. LeBron said, hey, it wasn't intended strictly for the Cavs or strictly for Tristan. It's for both sides. Well, yeah, right. You better believe that message was directed towards the Cavs, no matter what he said.
So we heard that this deal was done from some outlets, not you, I don't think, back on July 1st, 5 for 80. Then it doesn't get done. Did the Cavs think it was done, and what happened there?
I've never been able to get that confirmed. You know, when that report got out, I could not get in contact with anybody that will verify that. All I know is this, which is a mighty coincidence, is that when that number got floated out there, Draymond Green and his camp got their deal done within the hour or, you know, 2 hours of those numbers figures, you know, surfacing out on social media. So, all you know, we all know that going into free agency, Tristan Thompson and Draymond Green were linked. Who's going to get more? You know, if this guy signs first, is this guy going to want more? Whatever. And so we saw a scenario where Thompson's number gets floated out there. Draymond Green agrees to a 5-year, $82 million deal, a couple mil more than that deal. So, hey, what happened there? You know what I mean? So what happened? Nobody was able to get Thompson's deal confirmed, you know, even still to this date. So I don't know what happened. I don't know who's playing games. But all I know is that's a mighty strange occurrence that just happened. You know, for Draymond to get his deal done. And that's all I'm saying, and that's really all I have on that situation.
So it's been an eventful last week in this saga because Thompson had until October 1st to accept the qualifying offer. And we've been over this before on the podcast, but basically the qualifying offer is a one-year offer that you have to do to make the guy a restricted free agent. And the threat from Rich Paul was that he was going to sign that one-year offer and then be a free agent next summer and then just leave. That's sort of the hammer to force him into signing you to the long-term contract that you like once you haven't gotten an offer in restricted free agency. But the deadline to accept that passed on October 1st, a lot of people are saying, well, now Thompson has lost a lot of leverage. Not necessarily the case, though, is it?
No, not really. Look, I've always believed that the Cavs and Tristan Thompson, they want to get a long-term deal done. You know, they're committed to trying to work something out. And so while the qualifying offer was also a leverage play, it was an option. It was an option that they had at their disposal. Rich went out there publicly and said that if Tristan took that qualifying offer, that would be his last season in Cleveland. But, you know, the deal is to get a deal done with Cleveland. They can pay him the most money out of any team in the league. Now, with that being said, look at the situation now. You've got Kevin Love, who is a shoulder pop away from being out for the year again. You've got Timofey Mozgov, who is not where he needs to be right now, about 50% due to his knee scope he had over the summer. And as a veteran, I worked on his way back from an Achilles injury. I think Rich and those guys, I think they believe they got number time on their hands. You know, this is a year where it's a sense of urgency. The Cleveland Cavaliers, they have an opportunity to do something really special. And I'm not talking about just in this area, but do something that hasn't been done in the league. LeBron James's story of returning home is so much bigger than just, you know, in this area. And so there's a lot of pressure to make sure they do, at the Cavaliers organization, do everything that they can to keep this roster intact. Make sure all the distractions and all that stuff is kept on the back burner. And as of right now, going into a pivotal year, a potential monumental year, the distraction is there. The distraction is there. Tristan Thompson is not in camp. And I'm not even talking about what a guy is worth. I don't even get into that stuff. You know, you're worth whatever you can negotiate. I'm not even talking about, you know,
sure.
First, I'm talking about the opportunity for the Cavaliers to do something special. And this is not the way championship teams go about doing business. You know, this shouldn't have been done a long time ago. I know people may think, Nate, this has been a 3-month process. But really, if you go back to the extension last year, this is a, you know, negotiation that's been going on for over a year. You know, and
yeah,
we're still right here. And so
it's funny too, because everyone is like, oh yeah, you know, there, you heard the snarky comments, I'm sure, back even last October. Well, he's LeBron's boy, he's with his agency, like, they're just going to pay him. And then you said the same thing this summer, but that hasn't happened left. And so from the Cavs situation, you know, there's no real opportunity cost with cap space in the next couple of years. You know, you kind of want to keep LeBron happy. Really, your only cost right now is Dan Gilbert luxury tax, which, you know, is significant. If you're paying him $2 million a year, that's basically $10 million more in cash. But why hasn't this deal gotten done from the Cavs' perspective, if you were to ask them, what are they saying? Why are they not acceding to the demands?
Well, look, they have a reputation to uphold. They don't want to be that team that the league looks at and said, hey, man, LeBron James, Rich Paul, those guys are running out of organization. You know, they're going to get whatever they want. You have to remember, David Griffin, this is his biggest test as a general manager. You know, his reputation is online as well. So he's trying to make sure that he proves himself and going out there and like, look, hey, I'm not backing down from these guys. I'm going to do what's best for the organization. I'm going to try to get my deal. You know, look back, go to the J.R. Smith situation. Even though J.R. is not as connected to LeBron as Trish is, J.R. opted out of a deal that he was going to make, $6.5 million, and then found out the market was dry for his services, tried to go back to the Cavs and recoup that. The Cavs were like, look, man, we told you that you shouldn't have did that. So right now, all we got for you is $5 million. And, you know, they could have easily, just to save, you know, team morale, keep everybody happy, they could have gave them that 6.5 back. And like, hey, man, you're a big part of this team, man. We need you. Here, we know you made a mistake, but here's that 6.5. But no, they're showing you they're about business. You know, we want to win the title, but it's a business. So I think they're doing the same thing with Trist. Now, the only thing about this is you're messing with a different cat. You know, you're messing with one of LeBron James's guys. And I do commend David Griffin on, you know, what he's doing because
– Yeah, I'm impressed with the balls they've had, frankly.
You have to. Nate, you have to. He's doing a great job, and he's done an excellent job up to this point. But now this is a different ball game, and you're dealing with somebody that, like I said, is associated with LeBron James, and you may have to overpay. Now, some people are saying that, hey, that 5 years, $80 million, that is overpaying. You know, that a couple of those million they're giving Tristan or offering to Tristan is due to the presence of LeBron James in his association with Trish. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, the Cavaliers have an opportunity to do something special. I keep saying that. And they're going to have to make the call that it is a couple mil enough to hinder them from, you know, bringing this team back, keeping the morale good, and going into the season carefree and just focus on the basketball, or is a couple mil worth it to still have a guy out and, you know, probably suffer a devastating season and just expectations are just ruined. So that's something they have to deal with, and that's what's going on right now.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, there's a thought that he's lost leverage because of the one-year qualifying offer expiring, but, you know, if this gets into December and the Cavaliers are 500, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility with Shumpert now being out. I mean, people don't realize how much they need Shumpert, I think, as kind of their only two-way guy on the wing. And, you know, with the other injuries, guys coming back in the front court, like, this team could really struggle out of the gate. And then maybe, you know, the desire to get Tristan in, turns in the direction of Paul and the agency.
Yeah, I mean, and hey, even if they don't struggle, you know, they want him back. And when he comes back, look, players do it. They'll work out on their own. They'll do all the things necessary to try to keep themselves in shape. But still, there's still a time period where, you know, you have to get adjusted to NBA game shape. And that's going to take some time once he gets back. And then, you know, learning new schemes. You know, the Cavaliers, they're trying to try something different here. This is the deepest team that LeBron James has ever been on in his NBA career. They are at every position. They have a solidified, a backup player who could get in there and produce. That's never happened before. So the Cavaliers and David Blatt, they want to tinker with some stuff. They want to get some stuff going, see if some things work. If Tristan Thompson's not there, if he comes back much later, that just hinders the progress. And so, you know, they need to be on one accord right now, man. They got guys dropping like flies. And we mentioned Kyrie Irving, Iman Shumpert. Those guys, Anderson Varejao, those guys have a history of, you know, injury history. So you have to take that into account. Tristan Thompson is one of the most durable guys we have in this league. Come on. I mean, sooner or later, you got to get the deal done. And I think that's where LeBron James' frustration lies, is that he looks at that guy when he saw him down there in Miami doing that wedding. He was like, damn, I forgot what this guy was all about. You know, I mean, let's take a picture, man. Let's get this out, man. Like, I need you back. So, you know, I think that's just what's going on.
So what do you think now it'll take to get a deal done? Like, you sort of explain, all right, you know, both sides are kind of dug in. There's a little bit of a disincentive to compromise because it's just, you know, it's almost from a business standpoint, you know, Paul doesn't want to look like he caved. He's got a lot of, you know, a lot invested in getting more than the offer that was publicly out there. The Cavs don't want to look like they caved in for future negotiations. Like, where is the middle ground here?
You know what? Nate, I don't know that tough, you know, I don't know that answer, to be truthfully honest, but I will say this. I would be surprised if the Cavaliers offer 5 years, 85, 5 years, 87, and they turn that down. You know, I think just looking from the outside in with no knowledge of what's going on in regards to that question, I think 85, 87, I think that would be serviceable. And it is right now. I think we're going to get to that point of where a resolution has to be resolved now. And LeBron James coming out here heightens that. Coming out here with that post and saying what he said today, it heightens that. Increasing the level of intensity, it increases the urgency. So hopefully, and me personally, Nate, I hope it works, man, because me personally, I'm tired of covering the situation, man. God, this has been, come on, man. Like, I had a vacation.
Yeah.
I had a vacation. I went back home to Southern California, spent some time, but you still had the Tristan situation, you know, hovering over your head.
You're not supposed to have to work in August and early September.
On,
this
man.
Is the NBA.
Come
it's our one time off, right?
Golly,
well,
man. So I'm tired of talking about it myself. But so that's why I'm hoping, I'm hoping something is resolved. Just my own personal sake.
All right. Well, this is why I owe you a dinner when you come out here, because I just made you talk about it twice. So,
hey,
so let's move on to the actual team, I guess, huh?
No, let's go into the team. But look, yes, you will. And believe me, I'll make you pay. I'll find a nice restaurant down in San Francisco. So don't worry about that. I'll get my money's worth.
Yeah, there's no shortage of them out here. All right. So let's start talking about the health first for this team, right? There's a ton of guys coming off of injury. It's sort of thought that the Cavs are just going to waltz it into the finals again. But, you know, they got Kyrie, Love, Mozgov, Varejao, Shumpert, all those guys. Let's start with Kyrie first. Where is he at right now in his comeback?
Well, I reported, I don't know how long ago it was, 3 weeks, a month ago, that it was very unlikely that Kyrie would be available opening night. And I was told that it possibly extend out until January. And what I'm hearing is that, you know, it'll be somewhere in between. It could be December or something like that. But look,
really, before he even like comes back at all, huh?
Yeah. He's not going to be available overnight. He's not even practicing.
He's not like really just nothing. Not even individual work.
No, he's not practicing right now. He's really just trying to get that knee stronger. He's not working out with the team right now. He's there. He's present, but he's not practicing. So the Cavaliers have known this. They don't want to put a timetable. Kyrie doesn't want to put a timetable out there. And so this was the information that I got, you know, a couple weeks ago, you know, when I first put that report out, that he will not be available opening night, and it could possibly extend out until January. Now, like I said, me personally, I think it will probably be around late November, maybe December before he's back. Because the Cavaliers, it's not the fact that that's going to be the date that he's fully healthy. The Cavaliers just want to be careful. You know, they want to make sure that, you know, he's 100% going into the postseason. So in order to do that, you got to bring him along gradually, cautiously. And the fact that, they were able to get Mo Williams off of a cheap contract, that was a great move. And now you bring him into that starting spot for however long you need him, and you can come close to not missing a beat because Mo is just that good right now. So that's why I'm here with Mo. I mean, that's why I'm here with Kyrie as of right now. He hasn't practiced, not really doing much, but, you know, still trying to strengthen up that knee. And this was the plan all along. The Cavs just want to take it slowly, and because it's all about the postseason and not so much the start of the season.
So I saw in that piece that you reported, I think you termed his knee injury a dislocation. That was the first time that I had seen that. So is that really what happened? Because as I recall at the time, it was talked about as just being a fractured kneecap.
Fractured kneecap. I was told, you know, I had different people telling me different things, fractured kneecap. I was still never able to get that confirmed. But the people that, you know, I got some, you know, of course you got sources that you're close with, that you believe. And, you know, most of the people, they were just talking, just in general, they would just say, hey, dislocated kneecap. And I'm like, okay, they saying, all right. And so that's what I went with. That's what I'm going with as of right now.
Yeah. So, well, that's, you know, that's interesting. That's a little bit of a different injury if it is that, but you know, I guess we're not going to know for sure. I mean, so it's part of the reason they're taking this cautious approach, because it seemed like there was a little bit of friction with how his return was handled in the finals. And, you know, his father, it was reported that he was kind of upset. Like, is that kind of why they're really easing him back now?
Well, I think that definitely has something to do with it. There was definitely some things going on, you know, during that time. That probably prompted some of this, but you know, a lot of it is just his injury history, man. You know, his body has broken down throughout his brief NBA career, and so what they wanted him to do, and he did a lot of it this summer, you know, was just building up his lower body, you know, strengthening that up. You know, the way that he plays, the way that he cuts and pivots, you know, it takes a wear and tear, so your body has to be able to hold and withstand that type of pressure placed on your joints for 82 games. And that's what he, you know, Kyrie's game. That's how a crossover, you can't cross over if you don't plant. And you got to put pressure on your knees, your ankles. That's all about crossing over and moving to the next direction, smooth and quickly. And so I think that's what, you know, they just want to make sure his body is up for the task of being able to be the Kyrie Irving that we know. And so that, I think it's more so that than the stuff that was going on in the finals, but definitely that stuff that was going on in the finals, you know, you had the pop and the age and all that type of stuff, and, you know, Kyrie going out and getting a second opinion, aside from going away from what the team said, going seeking his own second opinion on his knee. You know, there was definitely some things going on, but I think it's more so to preserve the player that is Kyrie Irving.
Where's Caleb at right now? Is he, I mean, because he really hasn't been able to work out all summer, I assume, with that shoulder injury. Is the expectation he's going to be ready for opening night? And just how does he look, kind of look to you? I don't know if you've actually seen him play at all in camp, but, you know, where's he at right now?
No, we haven't seen him play. He's not out there with the team doing drills or anything right now. He when we get to go in, he's off to the side with a couple of assistant coaches, and they got pads. They're banging them a little bit down the paint, and he's doing post moves. So he's doing a lot of one-on-one drills, and that was the plan all along, to work him back gradually. He, for the most part, over the summer, he wasn't doing any non-contact. So now they're kind of elevated him to contact, but it's contact with pads, not necessarily body-to-body contact. So the plan is to make sure to try to get him there for opening night, October 27th against Chicago Bulls, but they're not going to push it. If they feel like he needs a couple more weeks, they're definitely going to give him the time. But they feel like with the time that he's going to be handed, he's only going to play one or two preseason games from what we're told. So they want to preserve his body. They want to make sure he's right for opening night.
How's he look? Just, you know, he's someone who at times has weighed a lot more. He's really slimmed down in recent years. How's he looking to you?
Yeah, he's real skinny. He's real skinny. Yeah. And you know, I asked him, you know, the way you're, you know, forming your body out now, is that any indication of how you're going to play? That means you accepted hanging out on the perimeter? He's like, no, this is just something that I felt like I need to do. And, you know, I feel like I could be much more quicker. And, you know, it's kind of strange because he was getting pushed off and shoved off the block last year, you know, when you get to the post.
Yeah.
And so now losing weight, I don't know how this is going to help him in the post unless he's going to turn this to a straight face-up post player and try to use his quickness and pivots to get around guys. So we'll see how his body has and his game has changed. But he looks skinny, but he looks like he's in shape. Just going off of those drills that, you know, the few drills that we get to see him doing out there in the post, you know, against pass, he looks okay. It doesn't look like he's favoring his shoulder at all, but, you know, obviously the team and himself as well, they want to be cautious.
So real quickly, Mozgov and Varejao, what's their status at the moment?
Mozgov looks pretty good. David Black said he's around 60% healthy right now as far as what he can give him. Varejao came into camp a little bit out of shape. And I guess that's common with the injury that he had. He wasn't able to run and do much. But he's working himself into shape. And Black also, you know, as well said that Varejao has been a pleasant surprise as far as what he's been able to do out there on the court. So I guess that's good news for the Cavaliers fans, that if he's not in shape totally right now and he's still going out there producing somewhat on the court, and that's a good thing. So those guys, I think those guys will be okay in the short term.
So moving now to kind of the prognosis for the team, one of the issues that I noted the most with the team, and by the finals, it was kind of by necessity because they just didn't have the talent around LeBron, but it was a very kind of isolation-heavy offense last year as things evolved. That's not necessarily how David Blatt used to play in Europe. Is there a hope now that this year they're going to do some more ball movement, do a little bit more of Blatt stuff, or is it more that Blatt is kind of conforming to the way that they played last year?
Yeah, well, look, I think that question is all to LeBron James. If, you know, LeBron, he hijacks offenses. That's he does it, you know, and he's good enough that he can do it and they can have some success. And that's one thing that Blatt wasn't accustomed to. He's used to them running their system. And you know how, Nate, you know how when the season first starts, you know how you'll see a team running the offense, they're moving along. But then you get that 10, 15 game around that mark, and they start going back to, you know, what they're accustomed to doing.
And they were struggling, too. So, you know, you could understand why LeBron did that. He went back with what he was comfortable with.
Exactly. And, you know, coaching LeBron is not easy, man. It's not easy because he is so great to where he will hijack the offense, but he's so good at what he does that he can produce. And not only for himself, but for his team. And so I don't really see that changing. You probably will see some modifications here and there. You'll probably see a little bit more stints of playing the type of style of basketball Blatt wants. But I think at the end of the day, when LeBron sees the team is in trouble, he's going back to his natural habits. And his natural habits aren't that bad. You know, they got him 2 championships already. So, I think that's all up to LeBron James. If he feels that whatever offense that's being implemented, if it's conducive for them winning at a high level and sustaining that type of level, I think he's going to buy in. But I think he feels if they get in trouble and he sees some switches that need to be made, he don't have to ask anybody to make a switch. He's just going to do it, and everybody else will adjust.
All right, so it's David Blatt. You're David Blatt. Game 7 of the finals, 5 minutes left, tie game. What is your lineup? What is this team's best crunch time lineup, in your view?
I like Kyrie. I like J.R. Shump. Wow, that's a good question.
You're about to leave off Kevin Love, aren't you?
Yeah. As of right now, you know, it depends on the lineup, but I might leave out Love it'd be between Tristan and Timofey Mozgov. Now, Nate, that's not every
so,
single
so you're
night.
Playing,
now.
You're playing LeBron at the four.
Yeah, Look, you say LeBron at the four. LeBron will be playing point, whatever. You know, You know what I mean? He'll be bringing the ball up, doing whatever. So, I like that lineup. I like that. It's a very quick, agile lineup. It's a lineup that, when you got Tristan in there, that you can switch everything. Very versatile defensive line. You can switch everything. Love will finish the majority of games. But you put me on the spot and ask me about the best lineup 5 minutes down, you know, left. Sure, it might just be Tristan over Love in that type of scenario. And but we'll see, man. Love. So it looks like he's committed to getting better on the defensive end. He definitely shows strides. I thought he was up to that task last year. So we'll see if he can take that to another level.
Yeah, and I understand the thinking there, right? You know, you've got LeBron, you've got Kyrie, you get some shooting around them with JR, and then you can score enough there, and then defensively, you know, teams might attack Love in the last 5 minutes of the game. So I understand the thinking there. I don't personally agree with you. I think Love is really good, and that you know, especially if there's a little more ball movement this year, that he can contribute more than he did last year necessarily. But we'll see. You know, it all depends too whether he's healthy or not as well. So I'm actually in the middle of writing a piece right now about which of the teams in the East might actually be able to challenge Cleveland. Who do you think matches up best with them, if
that's
anybody?
That's a short story you'll be writing, man.
this is like if everything goes right, you know, I mean, I think there's always one team that kind of emerges, right? Like nobody saw the Hawks coming last year, but they actually had a really good regular season. So, you know, I mean, we got like, you know, 6 months of basketball to watch here in the Eastern Conference. Let's at least pretend it's going to mean something.
Yeah, I'm not too high on the Eastern Conference, man. I think Chicago is the closest team, and I still think they're a ways away. I think Toronto took a step back losing Amir Johnson. I think Washington took a step back losing Paul Pierce. Atlanta, I'm not sure if they can sustain that level of play. And that Eastern Conference Finals, that was just atrocious. It was atrocious.
What about Miami? I'm thinking about Miami.
The only I like Miami on paper. The only thing is, man, I can't. Can you depend on Wade playing 65 plus games? That's the only thing. That's the only thing. If Wade can play 65 plus games, Miami is there, and I still can't put them over Chicago. With that being said, Nate, I really see I'm just basically giving the Cavs the Eastern Conference championship. You know, to that point. I'm that down on the Eastern Conference as a whole. I'm just giving it to them. And I think the Cavs' real challenge is going to be those Western Conference foes out there, because those are some serious high-level playing brothers over there, man. They, you know, the Houston Rockets, San Antonio Spurs over there. Who else? I'm missing out. I'm missing somebody. Oh, the Clippers?
Maybe the Warriors?
Hold on. My bad. I don't want to disrespect your neck of the woods. No doubt. The Warriors. I was thinking outside the Warriors. But, yeah, the Warriors, the L.A. Clippers, man, they're going to beat each other up over there. So I think that's the real – that's going to be their real problem. I'm just so down on the Eastern Conference, man.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's, you know, I would give Cleveland right now an 80% chance of winning the conference, and a lot of that is just based on, you know, maybe they're just being an injury for the Cavs. I mean, when you consider the health state of Kyrie and Love last year, and that they still were able to pretty much waltz through. I think you have to agree with that. I mean, I think Miami, if they could get everyone going, I think Bosch is a tough matchup for Cleveland, because if you put Thompson on him, then you're leaving Love as the guy who has to protect the rim, because you got to guard Bosch outside, and then Love can't guard Bosch one-on-one, and then you're going to take Love out, which, you know, that might cause some problems too. But I don't think Miami can stop them on the other end either, you know, unless Whiteside takes like a big step forward.
And I hope so, because I want to see some premium brand of basketball. You know, I don't want to wait for just the finals, man. I had to suffer through watching the Boston Celtics the first round. And now I'll say this, it was interesting because J.R. Smith knocked a guy out in, you know, the first round of the Boston Celtics. So that made it interesting. But aside from that, come on now, it was that. And the Bulls were, you know, it was okay when LeBron, you know, LeBron would hit that dagger, you know, of a baseline jump at the end of the game. That was pretty much it. The Atlanta Hawks, that was just bad all through, you know, throughout. So I want to see some. I want to see some good playoff games. So hopefully the Miami Heat can do it. I just don't have that utmost confidence in Wade that he can stay healthy.
All right, so give me a predicted record here for the Cavs and predicted finish in the playoffs.
Wow, predicted record. I would say probably, wow, that's probably going high. But I'm going to go 65-17.
Whoa, even with all the injuries. I think if they were healthy all year, they could get to that level. But I think with Shump being out especially, I think like they don't have anyone to play any defense on the wing. I mean, LeBron is not, he's not going to be that stopper, you know, all game, or even, you know, he's not at that point in his career anymore where he could do that. So I think they're going to struggle defensively the first half of the year. But I think, like, they'll be playing at the quality of maybe that level of a team by the end of the year if everyone's healthy. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I would think more so, and I was going to say, 60 and 22, but the only reason I'm going even as high as 65 is just that, when players, when they get that, they come so close that first year, and then they virtually get the same team back that second year, it's so much easier. You know what I mean? You don't have to go through all the rigors of trying to figure out everybody, trying to experiment. They know who they are. So even though they're going through, some dying times with injuries, they're a more experienced ball club. And so I think that'll help them get some wins. But, yeah, 65 may be too much. I think they'll get to 60. I do. I think they'll get to 60. And, LeBron James, that guy, man, he accounts for a ton of those wins. So I think that's why I'm leaning so high. And the playoffs.
So you mentioned, the playoffs, yeah.
Playoffs?
No, I was going to change the subject.
Okay, go on. Let's change it there.
No. Also, yeah, I changed the subject too early. Yeah, I definitely want to hear whether you obviously think they're going to get to the finals. You think they win it?
Oh, man. they got a good shot. Maybe
yeah, a lot's going to depend on the matchups, too.
Yeah, it depends on the matchups, man. And God, you put me on the spot, man. Look, they got I'm not ready to say they're going to win it, but look, man, I think they got a better shot of winning this coming up year than they did last year. If that gives
you
enough.
Yeah, especially when you consider how unhealthy they were at the end of the year. So you mentioned LeBron. He's going to turn 31 in December. How much longer, we've seen, I think we could both agree that he's not quite at the level that he was in Miami, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think for the most part, yeah.
So how much longer can he still be, kind of up there, best player in the league type of level before, the drop-off really happens? I mean, he's already kept it going for longer than most people have historically. I mean, is the number of 31, 32-year-olds who have been, a top three player in the league. That's like Jordan and, maybe Kareem. There's not that many of them out there. How much longer can he keep it going before he kind of moves into a new phase?
That's a good question. I think if you look at some of the greatest players who play this game, especially on the perimeter, they start tailing off around this time. They go up until 34, 35. I don't know. I can only guesstimate that LeBron has about 3 years of prime basketball. And when I mean prime basketball, I mean being considered arguably the best. But it can be sooner than that. A lot of times that drop-off happens, like that. And even last year, injuries played such a big part. And he missed the most games he's ever missed in the season last year, taking 2 weeks off, in December. So is his body still up to the task of taking a pounding and bruising and still playing the very next day, time after time? I don't know. Will he allow for the coaching staff to give him rest? Because he talked about it, that he's hard headed. He's adamant that he wants to be out there and playing every day. Is he going to allow his body to, regroup, get back to normal, so he can be able to go out there and give him his best? So, that's the million-dollar question, Nate. How many prime years does he have left? I think we probably agree that he probably has at max three, maybe.
Yeah, I think this year is probably going to be their best chance with this group, because I do think he may start falling off. And even if you watch him in the playoffs last year, right, his jumper just completely abandoned him for some reason, right? He couldn't make a jump shot, and he's not really, except for a few times, just blowing by guys. It was more kind of bludgeoning in the post, especially against the Warriors, I think he's not being able to get the type of easy points that he once did. I do worry a little bit. I mean, I think his game has definitely changed, and he's also not quite the same force defensively as well. But then again, there's not that many 31-year-olds who are in NBA history, he was still even as good as he is now. So it's not to denigrate what he's doing, but you got to be realistic about kind of where he might be in the last couple of years. And that adds to that sense of urgency
exactly
that we've been talking about.
Exactly. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. And I think that's the reason why LeBron is speaking out. Tristan is not, you know, he's not an all-star player, but he's a very important piece to the Cavaliers. And he's one of the guys that LeBron James feels very comfortable finishing games with. And so he wants that guy along for the ride, man. And so that's why you hit it head on. I think that's what adds to the sense of urgency.
All right. So last question before I let you go. This is a question I've been asking a lot of the guests in these team previews. Since David Griffin became the GM, which was basically 2 winters ago, 2014, what grade would you give for this team's ownership and front office since that time?
So this was, you said before Griffin became GM?
Yeah. Well, so Griffin came in, I forget when it was, like February of 20, I forget whether it was before or after the trade deadline, but, you know, basically he didn't do anything, I don't think, until that summer of 2014.
Correct.
So basically since like February of 2014 is what we're looking at.
How would I grade ownership and management?
And management, yeah.
Okay. I would grade them you would have to give them an A. I think look at what they've done. Obviously, LeBron James spearheaded a lot of those moves, but still, you had to have the assets in place. I think once LeBron James committed, David Griffin got on the ball and waived some players, traded some players, got key salaries to where he can move quickly in order to, you know, to make room and eventually get Kevin Love, and it definitely helped them get the number one pick. But, you know, getting Kevin Love and, you know, then going out there and getting Sean Marion, who was a, you know, the good move at the time. we didn't know you didn't know he didn't have much left, but you know, him and Sean Marion, then, you know, this summer you had Kevin Love, who many thought he was going to, you know, check out his options. He was going to go on some dates, go have dinner with Boston, have dinner with Lakers. He signed first day of free agency. They got that done. They got Iman Shumpert done. They got J.R. Smith to take a pay cut. You know, it was an involuntary pay cut, but, you know, they got him for a pay cut. And so everything up to this point, you have to give them credit. They've done a phenomenal job. But you know how it is. You know, you're only as good as your last story or your last, you know, accomplishment. And right now, the Tristan thing is what's hanging over everybody's head right now. So a lot is going to put, you know, a lot will factor in to how they get things done with this guy.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a couple things. I agree with you, by the way. I mean, I think it is, I would say maybe an A-. I mean, whenever you go from being in the lottery to the finals in a year, you know, yeah, you could say it was LeBron who came back, but you got to give management credit for that and credit for even being in that position to where he could come back and come back in a way to a team that had the assets around him. I mean, the two that stuck out to me, number one, that Varejao extension. See, like that's the one move that doesn't, they've been like pretty financially responsible, but that move like never made any sense to me, like why they did that at that point. And then he immediately tore his Achilles right after that, which everyone could have anticipated, you know?
Yeah, that was strange. And there's definitely some agents out there that, you know, were puzzled over that move. I guess the one good thing about that is, for the Cavs' sake, is that I think the last 2 years of that are non-guaranteed deals. So
last year is non-guaranteed, but the year before is like 98% guaranteed. It's really weird. Gotcha. I've never seen anything like that before for a guarantee. But
okay, so
if they didn't have him, you know, it would be a lot easier to just write the check for Tristan right now, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I guess you can essentially use that, eventually use that Varejao chip similar to the Haywood, correct? What they did with the Haywood deal. Yeah. So I guess they have that going for them, but, you know, his injury history and the fact that you have a lot, you knew you were going to have to pay Tristan. You knew that. And so this is just a situation that they put themselves in. And, you know, as of right now, they're dealing with the consequences of those actions.
Yeah. And if they, I mean, now I'll freely admit, I wasn't saying at the time back last, because you talked about how it's been over a year now with these negotiations. I mean, I think it was like, you know, 4 for 54 or something was like what he was looking for at the time. If they had just paid that, then they would have been in a good position. But I don't think anyone was saying they should pay that because he hadn't really proven what he proved this last year at that point.
Yeah, I mean, nobody really can expect what the new TV deal, how that was going to impact, the price of players for this summer and moving forward. So it was hard to estimate. I think the Cavaliers tried, similar to what they're doing now, that they're holding firm. They want to show that they're not going to be, pushed around. But at certain, look, I'm not for Tristan to get the deal. I'm not for the Cavs to get the deal. I just think a deal needs to be made. And at some point, man, this thing has to be resolved. And the Cavs need Tristan. Tristan needs, he needs the Cavs. Work something out. And, look, Nate, a lot of people feel that, that money that they're – the money, like if they did give Tristan – like, say they did give Tristan the max. A lot of people feel, hey, that money should be going to LeBron James anyway for what he's done to the organization and the city of Cleveland and just bringing life back to the city. You know what I mean? So, hey, give it to him. So, I don't know, man. This is a crazy situation. I've never covered anything like this before. So it's interesting how these things keep developing, each and every day. And no matter how the Cavaliers try to play it and say it's not a distraction, every single day they're getting asked questions. LeBron's getting asked questions. Hey, Tristan. It has to be a distraction.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Where can we catch up with you on Twitter?
Yeah, you can catch me. My Twitter handle is @ChrisBHaynes. Last name, HAYNES. Best way to find me. You can also find my fan page, Facebook, @ChrisBHaynes as well. Follow me, check me out. I give interesting insights, scoops, the whole shebang. But Nate, I appreciate you having me on, my guy.
Yeah, thanks. No, we got some unique insight from you on this Thompson situation. We really appreciate it. For those who want to follow me on Twitter, it's Nate Duncan NBA. My Facebook page, Nate Duncan NBA as well. That's where you can keep up with my writing and all the podcasts. We also appreciate a subscription on iTunes or a rating or ranking. All that helps us keep this little project going, and we can bring you great guests like Chris going forward. So for Chris Haynes, I'm Nate Duncan. We'll talk to y'all next time.